Okay, we're starting on Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, seven lines down. Amalei Abaye the Rovo, or the alternative gear says the Rabo Maishna Lulav Davidinan Le Shiva Zeichel Migdash Umaishna Arava Tulo Avdinan La Shiva Zeichel Migdash. Why is it by Lulav that we do it for 7 days? First day you do right, but the subsequent 6 days Zeichel Migdash. On the other hand, by Arava, which also applies to the 7 days. We only do one day, Zeichel Mikdash, which is Hoshana Rabbah. We only do it on the seventh day. So why is there a difference in the number of days that we perform today, Zeichel Mikdash? So he says, Amalei, Hoil, Vadam Yotzei Yedei Chuvato Ba'arava Shebelulav. So Rabbah answered him, because he has the opportunity to use the Arava in the Lulav. Amalei, Ha'o Mishum Lulavu, Dekavidei. What does that have to do with the Arava? Those Aravot that are in the Lulav are for the mitzvah of Lulav. They have nothing to do with Arava. What are you going to say? The kamagbale, v'hadar magbale. You're going to say, he raised it up, he lifted it once, and then he lifts it up a subsequent time, a second time, one for lulav, one for arava. V'ha ma'asim b'chol yom lo ka'abdin anhochi. We know people don't do this. It's not the practice of people. They lift the lulav once, they do it to be yotzei the mitzvah lulav, and that's it. They don't lift it up a second time for the mitzvah arava. Amar av zvid mishmei derobo, lulav deoraita. Avdinan shiva zeichel migdash. Arava de rabbanan lo avdinan la shiva zeichel migdash. The lulav, which is a din d'oraita, we do it for 7 days zeichel migdash. Arava, which is a din de rabbanan, we only do it for 1 day zeichel migdash. Laman, according to whom is the arava a din de rabbanan? Ilem al Abba Shaul. According to Abba Shaul, Damar Arve Nachal in plural, Tiv Shtaim Achad Lulav Achad Migdash. Then it's derived from the pasuk of Arve Nachal. Il Rabbonon Yochata Gemiralo. It's Alocha the Moshe Misinai. The Amar Abasiyam Rabbi Yochan Mishum Rabbi Nechunya Ishbikat Beit Choratan. These items are all Alocha the Moshe Misinai. Eser Nitiot. We did this before, so I'm going to run through them. But the 10 saplings that are planted in the field allow you to plow all the way until Rosh Hashanah on Erev Shavuot. Arava, which is the practice of taking the Arava in the Mikdash. And Nisuch HaMayim, and the water libations that happen on Sukkot as well. All of these are Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. So either according to Abba Shaul or the Rabbanan, we're still dealing with the Din D'Oraita. We're not dealing with the Din D'Rabbanan. El Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei D'Rovo Lulav D'it Le'ikar Mina Torah B'Gvulin. Lulav, which has a basis midoraita in the gvulin, on the first day, it's deoraita even today, on the first day of Sukkot. Avdilan deish shiva zeichel mikdash. We expand the din deoraita to be all 7 days for zeichel mikdash. Arava deleitla ikar mina torah bigvulin. Arava, which has no place in the gvulin midoraita, the only place it's midoraita is in the mikdash. Lo avdilan shiva zeichel mikdash. We can do zeichel mikdash. We did one day that was Zeichel the Mikdash to remember something that was in the Mikdash. So Lulav exists without the Zeichel the Mikdash. So you probably would have to do at least a minimum of 2 days to be Zeichel the Mikdash, because the first day is the Oraita anyway. It's not Zeichel the Mikdash. So you'd have to do another day to be Zeichel the Mikdash. Once you did that, they made it all 7 days that are Zeichel the Mikdash. On the other hand, Arava has no manifestation the Oraita today outside of the Mikdash. So all you need is 1 day to be Zeichel the Mikdash. Amar Eish Lakish, Kwanim Balei Mumin, נכנסים בין האולם ולמזבח די לצאת בערבה. כהנים בעלי מומים are not allowed to enter generally between אולם למזבח. בין אולם למזבח is the מזבח החיצון. Beyond the מזבח החיצון begin the stairs that go up to the אולם, and that area is known as בין אולם למזבח. That area, זרים are not allowed, ישראל are not allowed. כהנים themselves are not allowed there, אלא אם כן לצורך. They have to be there for a necessity. And Kohanim, Bamei Mumim, are not classified as Kohanim because they can't do Avodah with respect to this. And therefore they can't enter into that area. Reish Lakish says that the Kohanim, Bamei Mumim, when they were doing Hakafot of the Aravot, they used to go on, you have to go around the Mizbeach. When you do that, you have to get to the other side of the Mizbeach, on the side that is Bein Ulam La Mizbeach. So he says the Kohanim, Bamei Mumim, used to do that. Amalei Rabbi Yochanan Umi Amra. Who says? So Umi Amra, who says, Hayu Amar. He's the one who said it. Now, what the Gemara thinks the question is right now is, who says that a Rava is a mitzvah, deoraita, that would allow this to happen? Maybe it's not a mitzvah at all. That's what the Gemara thinks Rabbi Yochanan is challenging Reish Lakish with. The Gemara says, what do you mean? It's not a mitzvah. Ha Amar. He's the one himself. Rabbi Yochanan himself says it is. This is what we just quoted before. So that's definitely not the question at hand here, because clearly Rabbi Yochanan believes that it is a mitzvah deoraita. So that's one possibility of what the question was. The way Tosafot phrases the question, he says, who says this is a deoraita obligation? And it comes and overrides certain stringencies or extras that the Rabbanon put in place, indicating that Ben Ulam the Mizbeach is a Maila de Rabbanon, in order to give hierarchy within the Mikdash as to the Kedushah, so they prevented certain people from going there. But if it's an obligation to write that, you could override it. Maybe it's a Din de Rabbanon, and that Din de Rabbanon wouldn't override the Maila de Rabbanon not going between Ulam and Mizbeach. Gemara says it's for sure to write though, because Rabbi Yochanan himself says it's Alocha LeMoshe MiSinai. So it's clearly not the issue here. Ella, Mi Amra B'Netila. Who says the mitzvah Arava is carrying it around? Because if the mitzvah is to carry it around, then I understand why the Kohanim Bali Mumim were going around the other side of the Mizbeach, because that's the mitzvah. But Zilma B'Zkifa, maybe it's withstanding up the Aravot, meaning that you only need one Kohen, or a limited number of Kohanim, to stand up the Aravot by the Mizbeach. That's not something that would devolve upon all the Kohanim that were there. So first of all, who says that it's a mitzvah that's granted to the masses of Kohanim? Maybe it's one or two Kohanim or one Kohen that's involved with it, because it's Skifa, not Netilah. Mi Amra B'Bali Mumim, Dilma Mitzvimim. Who says that Bali Mumim were permitted? Maybe it was Tmimim. I mean, where do you get this information, Rish Lakish, from? All we know is that it's a mitzvah d'oraita. When we know mitzvah d'oraita, why do you have any reason to believe that we have kulot over here, or that what you're saying is true? And so that's his challenge to Rish Lakish, or Rish Lakish's statement. I'm not sure where you got this information, because clearly there's no source for that information in Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai or in the Din d'oraita. Now, it is interesting that with regards to Abba Shaul, it's even more unclear. At least when you have the Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai, you could talk about that only Kohanim can perform it, or you can have other restrictions involved in Arava that can all be part of the Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai. For Abba Shaul, it's not clear where he gets all these restrictions from, because according to Abba Shaul, it's part of Arvei Nacha, and there's no reason there to believe it's Kohanim and not Israelim, except maybe for the location where it is in the Mikdash, which would preclude Israelim. But otherwise, all these other pieces of information, according to Abba Shaul, it's not clear how he has these limudim, or how he knows that it only applies to Kohanim, and any other piece of information that he has, because he thinks it's Deoraita from Arvei Nacha. He has no other source for how to deal with the Aravot. And now the Gemara moves on to a different issue. It's a very important issue, which has major halachic ramifications until today, which is Itmar, B'Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Charamar Arava Yisod Nevi'im. Charamar Arava Minhag Nevi'im. This din of Arava, what is the source for this mitzvah of Arava? Is it a Yisod Nevi'im? Meaning it was put in place, takanat of the Nevi'im Achronim, like Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, that they put in takanot for Yisrael along with the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and this is part of their takanot, Yisod Nevi'im? Or is it a Minhag Nevi'im? Is it something that the Am did? It wasn't a takana, but some of the practice of the Am. Rashi claims the nafkamina is whether you make a bracha on it or not. If it's a Yisod Nevi'im, then you can say, Asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav vitzivanu, that you commanded us, because it would be affected by the din of lotasur, the requirement to listen to the chachamim. Since there's a requirement to listen to the chachamim, and they impose the takana, then you can say the bracha of asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav vitzivanu. On the other hand, if it's simply a minhag nevi'im, it's a minhag ha'am, you can't say asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav vitzivanu. There's no mitzvah, and there's no vitzivanu. So you can't say a bracha in that case. So that would be a big nafkamina between whether you think the Arava is a Yisod Nevi'im or Minhag Nevi'im. That's how Rashi explains it. Where it says, Tistayim the Rabbi Yochanan hu da'amar Yisod Nevi'im. Let us conclude that Rabbi Yochanan is the author of the position that says it's Yisod Nevi'im. Dam Rabbi Yibau am Rabbi Yochanan, Arava Yisod Nevi'im hu. Because you have a quote directly from Yochanan that it is a Yisod Nevi'im, Tistayim. So there we would conclude that he is the author of that position. Amarle Rabbi Zeira Labaribo, Mi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi. Even if it's a Yisod Nevi'im, forget about Minhag Nevi'im, if it's a Yisod Nevi'im, how could Rabbi Yochanan be the author of such a position? This is again the third time recording this on the daf. It's like Fred just asked, wait a minute, didn't we just say that it is a din d'oraita? Not only did we just say it was a din d'oraita, we said Rabbi Yochanan was the author of a position that says it's a din d'oraita. So how do you get this yisod nevi'im or minhag nevi'im from something that's a din d'oraita? Ishtomeim kishachada. He was silent for a moment. He was caught off guard by the question. And then Vamar, and then he answered, Shachachum v'chazru v'yazdum. That they forgot those halachot, and then they reestablished them. This is something we saw already once in the Masechta. It appears in a number of other places, including the Gemara Megillah, which we'll see, that there are certain halachot that were in place, or halachot of Moshe Mitzrayim, that fell into disuse, either because of Galut Bavel, when they left Eretz Yisrael and the practices fell away, especially in a case like this where it's associated with the Mikdash, it fell into disuse because there was no practice. And then when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, the Nevi'im Achronim, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, put the practice back into place. So they called it an Yisod Nevi'im, but it's not really a practice of Yisod Nevi'im, it's really just reinstating the Din De'oraita. That's the claim here. Mar says, Mi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hochi. Did Rabbi Yochanan really say such a thing? Vamar Rabbi Yochanan, Dilchon, Imre Dilchon hi. There are two versions of how to read this Gemara. What we have in here is the Girsa of Rashi. Rashi claims that this is what was transpiring, which is that Rabbi Yochanan saying to his Talmidim, after Rav Kahana was Olemi Bavel. When he was Olemi Bavel, he became a Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan. And Rav Kahana was a very sharp Talmid Chochom. And Rabbi Yochanan had certain sfeikot, which he asked Rav Kahana about to clarify for him because he had this knowledge from Bavel. And so Rabbi Yochanan comments to his student body as a whole. He says, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Dilchon, Amrei Dilchon hi. That which was yours, meaning that which I thought belonged to you, the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, Imri Dilhoni, is really belongs to them. So them, meaning the Bnei Bavel. He originally thought that primary Torah was in Eretz Yisrael, because they didn't go into Galut, they were always in their place, and therefore the Torah of Eretz Yisrael was ascendant. It was the governing Torah body, and it was a better Misorah, because they never had to leave. But the people went to Bavel, they forgot, they lost contact with the Mesorah, but so their Torah was subpar. But now he says, after seeing Rav Kahana, that wasn't the case. That in Bavel, they were doing even better, or even stronger Mesorah than they had in Eretz Yisrael. That would be a question on this position, because the whole premise of the Yisod Nevi'im is that they went to Bavel, they forgot about it, and then they came back to Eretz Yisrael and reestablished it, and that's why it was an Yisod Nevi'im. But that would only be true if there was some break in the Mesorah in Bavel. And what Rabbi Yochanan here, making a statement, is saying that there was no gap in the Mesorah, because look at Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana's got more than you guys here in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the way Rashi reads the Gemara. Rabbeinu Chananel has an alternative girsa, which is Dilchon Amar Dilchon Hi. Umfaresh Rabbeinu Tam, Shayer Rabbi Yochanan Omer Talmidav Shayulafanav Mi Bavel. This is a common theme within Tosafot. Tosafot says it again in the Gemara in Kedushin with Ha Didhu Ha Didhon. And the Gemara there makes a differentiation between Bnei Eretz Yisrael and Bnei Bavel. So Rashi claims that it had to be that Rabbi Yochanan who was a Baal Eretz Yisrael, was speaking to Talmidim in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's opinion must be the one that the people of Eretz Yisrael had. Tosafot of there claims no, that there were many Talmidim from Bavel who traveled to learn by Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan could have been speaking to those Talmidim. And he says here, Echad mishalachem omer, dehu Rav Kahana, one of you, from amongst you, you Talmidim from Bavel, one of you from amongst those Talmidim, who is Rav Kahana, shalami Bavel, dulhoni, he says, mishalahemi, he says that the source for Arava is from you, from Bavel. If that's the case, komar shuhi minhag nevi'im. If that's the case, then it has to be a minhag nevi'im and not a yisod nevi'im. Because if the source for it is in Bavel, then it's certainly not a takana of the nevi'im, then it's got to be a minhag nevi'im. If that's the case, then that would be soter, what we just saw in Rabbi Yochanan's statement before, which was that it was a yisod nevi'im. So the question according to Rashi is, there's no severing of the Mesorah, so that can't be the explanation from changing from Doraita to a yisod nevi'im. According to Rabbeinu Chanan, the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it, the problem here is that they're saying, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that it's a minhag nevi'im out of Bavel, and how is Rabbi Yochanan over here saying that it is a yisod nevi'im? So, lo kasho, that's not a problem. Time to Mikdash, Kain Beit Gvulin. Depends upon where you're speaking about. In the Mikdash, you're talking about Elohecha L'Moshe Misinai. The Din Doraita of Arava only applies to the Mikdash. We just saw that before, because when we do Zecher L'Mikdash, there's no manifestation Doraita in the Gvulin. On the other hand, in the Gvulin, the practice in the Gvulin to do it Zecher L'Mikdash, that is a Yisod Nivim. According to the Rabbeinu Tam's explanation, you would have to say here, Kain Beit Mikdash, Kain Beit Gvulin, would have to be a difference between a Yisod Nevi'im versus a Minhag Nevi'im, that the practice in the Mikdash was Yisod Nevi'im and the practice in the Gvulim was a Minhag Nevi'im. So that'd be the differentiation that we make. Now, this has major implications because of what Rashi said before, that if a Rava is a Minhag Nevi'im, then we wouldn't make a bracha on it. If it's a Yisod Nevi'im, then you would make a bracha on it. The Gemara is about to give examples of people who did not make a bracha on the Arava because they believed it was a Minhag Nevi'im. What you would conclude from that is that any practice that we have that derives from a Minhag, you would not make a bracha on. Problem that's raised by the Rabbeinu Tam here right away is Chatzi Hallel, a half Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, the six latter days of Pesach, where we say a Chatzi Hallel. Do you make a bracha on that Minhag? Saying of Hallel or Chatzi Hallel is only a Minhag. According to the Gemara in Arachin, there are only 18 days during the year where you're gomeret halel, we say a full halel, and that does not include Rosh Chodesh or the latter 6 days of Pesach. So those are the 18 days, and in Chutz Laaretz it's 21 days where you finish the halel. That's the din, either midrabanan or the din of the Nevi'im to say halel on these periods of time. So there you can make a bracha on it. But the halel of Rosh Chodesh and the halel of Pesach, the latter 6 days of Pesach, is simply a minhag. How do you make a bracha on such a halel? So the conclusion of Rashi is, you don't make a bracha. Conclusion of the Rambam is, you don't make a bracha. Conclusion of most is, you don't make a bracha. Except for the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam believes that you do make a bracha on a minhag. And now he has a problem here because of our Gemara. Our Gemara seems to imply that if it's a minhag, you do not make a bracha. So the Rabbeinu Tam makes a distinction. He says, Rabbeinu Tam omer, de'ein raya mi'arava lehalel. You can't compare the cases of Rava and Halel. The Rava ina ela tiltul. Rava is only a carrying. There's nothing to it. Since it's just simply taking of the Arava, not anything significant, and it's only a minhag, therefore they didn't make a bracha on it. Aval kriyat Halel, lo gara mi korei b'Torah. Kriyat Halel is no worse than reading the Torah. Ukabatei ashechad nimarachinan. And similar to that, we find we make brachot of shnei yavim tovim shel galuyot. You make a bracha on the second day of Yom Tov in Chutz Laaretz. Ve'enu ela minhag ba'alma, and over there it's only a minhag. The fact that we keep a second day of Yom Tov, we're going to see in the Gemara in Beitza, is minhag avoteihem v'yadeihem. So that's why they keep a second day of Yom Tov in Chutz Laaretz. And you make brachot all through the day on the second day of Yom Tov. So you see that there is room for a bracha on a minhag. We also see that when it comes to reading the Torah, in terms of the aliyot, we make brachot on Kriyat HaTorah, even though that's only a minhag, to have the different aliyot. So all these things lead him to believe that there is a bracha on minhagim. It also says an aside, he says, Omiyo emi zeraya. He says, maybe that's not a proof from the second day of Yom Tov, Ad time de mevarchim arava, mandar minhag nevim ishum delef shalomar betzivanu. Because there you can't say betzivanu. And the same thing by the second day of Yom Tov, it doesn't have the din of Vitzivanu. So since you don't have a bracha of Vitzivanu, because you say Kiddush and things like that, that don't involve Vitzivanu, so therefore these aren't a proof that you can really make a bracha on the Hallel. Now that statement is very controversial. He's saying you don't make a bracha on the second day of Yom Tov that involves a Sher Kiddushanu v'mitzvotav Vitzivanu. Is that really true? You make a bracha on Lulav, but that you do everywhere. So that's not a proof, but... Right, but those are all mitzvot derabanan, so those aren't proof, those are not minhagim. Proof is from Pesach, the second day, the second Seder, you say, Asher kedishanu mitzvah vitzivanu ala chilat maror, ala chilat matzah. There are brachot of vitzivanu that are embedded in the second Seder, so you do make brachot of vitzivanu when it comes to the second day of Yom Tov. So what is Tosfot saying over here, that there's no bracha of vitzivanu on the second day of Yom Tov? It's a very surprising statement in the Tosfot. Rabbi Akiva Eiger raises the issue right away. Says, I don't know what you're talking about. There are Vitzivanu on the second day of Yom Tov. Then he says, what about Shofar? Shofar on the second day of Rosh Hashanah is Sher Kiddushanu Mitzvah Vitzivanu. Yishmoa Kol Shofar. Ah, very good. So those were answers like you do, which is that Rosh Hashanah is different because it's a Yom Marichtas Kedusha Achat. So maybe don't bring a proof from that. Okay, now he brings a proof from Rav. Rav went into a place where they were saying Hallel on a day that they shouldn't have been saying Hallel. And he goes in there and he's about to object to them saying Hallel. Rosh Chodesh went in there, they're saying Hallel, he can't believe it. What are they doing? They're saying Hallel. All of a sudden they start to skip in the middle of Hallel. And he says, ah, must be Minhag Adayim be Adayim. That there was the Minhag of their forefathers to do this, and it's only a Minhag that they're saying Hallel, it's not a Halacha, so there's no problem. The Rabbeinu Tam says, why did he have to wait until they skipped in Hallel to know that it was only a Minhag? How could he have known whether they made a Bracha or not? Rav's there, and he says, it doesn't sound like he walked into the shul in the middle of Hallel, because then it should have said he came into the shul. There it says when he came to Bavel, he saw this practice, and he didn't know what to do with it. Now, if they didn't make a bracha, he would have no question about the practice. He would know that they didn't make a bracha on it. What must be the Rabbeinu Tam's proof? It's an ingenious proof, because everybody else brings this as a proof that there is no bracha on the minhag. But Rabbeinu Tam brings it as a proof to his opinion, because he says, otherwise Rab would have known that there was a problem in the Hallel already, because they didn't make a bracha on it. The fact that they made a bracha means that he didn't know that information until they skipped inside of the Hallel. So that's how the Rabbeinu Tam proves his point that there is a bracha on a minhag. What he has to deal with is the nature of that bracha. It's clear that the bracha on Hallel was ligmorat Hallel, similar to what the Sfardim still do till today. The bracha was to ligmorat Hallel, to finish the Hallel. If that's the case, then also it would have been obvious, because you can't say ligmorat Hallel when you're saying a chatzi Hallel. So even if you said a bracha on a full Hallel, the bracha would be ligmorat Hallel. And a chatzi Hallel, the bracha would be likroat Hallel. So Rav would have picked up difference already by the nature of the bracha. That's where the Rabbeinu Tam argues that you can say likroat Hallel on the whole thing. Whether you're finishing it or not finishing it, likroat Hallel is a fine bracha, and he proves that likro can refer to completing it because of al mikra megillah. When we read the Megillah, we say a bracha of al mikra megillah, and we're going to finish the whole Megillah, so it's appropriate to use mikra. Now, Tosafot agrees that there was a period of time where it seems they differentiated, that they did say likroat Hallel over the whole Hallel, and likroat Hallel on a chatzi Hallel. But he says that it's fine, and there's no problem with saying likroat Hallel on both. And maybe that's what they did in Bavel, but they actually said it on both. They said likroat Hallel, and therefore you couldn't have any evidence from the nature of the bracha. And that's our practice, the Ashkenazi practice, who do say a bracha on minhagim like Hallel. We do say likroat Hallel for all times, not just when we read chatzi Hallel. As opposed to the Sfaradim, who paskin like the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, who say that we don't say a bracha on a minhag, therefore they say ligmorat Hallel, because they only make a bracha when they are gomer et Hallel. So they left the bracha, the original bracha intact of the Gemara Ta Hallel. Right, so this machloket leads to a difference in opinion with regards to the Ashkenazim, who do make a bracha al pi Rabbeinu Tam, and the Sfaradim, who follow the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, who say that we don't make a bracha on a minhag. Now, as far as the Yom Tov Sheni and the problem that arose here in the Tosafot, the Brisker Rav has a little piece of Torah with regards to this, that there's a difference between Minag Devi'im and a mitzvah, which is that with regards to a bracha on a minhag, he says that where the minhag is a standalone minhag, then in that case, making a bracha would be inappropriate. And that's what happens here by the arava. The whole mitzvah, the arava, derives simply from a minhag. The whole thing is a minhag, and the mitzvah itself inherently is a minhag, and therefore to make a bracha of asher kidishenu mitzvah tzivanu is inappropriate. On the other hand, when you have a mitzvah, whether it's, let's say, Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliot, the minhag is the Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliot. What's subsumed in the minhag Avotayim B'Yadayim to have a Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliot, how do you make a Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliot, is that you have all the mitzvot that are associated with that Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliot. So the minhag is to keep the Yom Tov Sheni, but the mitzvot that are found there are all mitzvot that have a din of a mitzvah somewhere else on the first day of Yom Tov. So like maror and matzah are nekdarka mitzvot on the first day of Yom Tov. And now when you do them on the second day of Yom Tov, then you're just doing the mitzvah that was otherwise found on the first day. Why are you doing the second day? Okay, that's minhag avotayim b'yadayim. But they're already built into a framework that they are a mitzvah. And so because of that, they already have a shem mitzvah. Shem mitzvah you can make a bracha on. That's the distinction that draws to explain this issue of Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliot versus arava. Even though there's a minog to have a Yom Tov Sheni, there the ikar of the matzah and the maror is not because of the minog. The ikar of matzah and maror is because on the first day you eat matzah and maror, they're a mitzvah. Since they're a mitzvah, then on the second day you do them as well. Why do you do them on the second day? That has to do with minog of a day and be a day. So there it's like a two-step process which allows you to make the bracha on it. By arava, there's no two steps here. The minhag of Tei Behem is the practice to take the arava. There is no practice outside of that that would say that it's a mitzvah or give it a shame mitzvah that now you're doing because of minhag. No. The whole action derives from a minhag, and therefore there is that distinction. It's interesting that the Rambam himself, who says by the arava it's a minhag and you don't make a bracha, and by halal he says you don't make a bracha, yet by Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galut he does say you make a bracha. For the Rambam, you have to come up with a sharper distinction, which is that by Yom Tov Sheni, you make a bracha as a derivative of those mitzvot that came from the Yom Tov Rishon. But by Hallel, where also here, even though Hallel exists, the mitzvah has a manifestation in other locations, meaning when you do full Hallel, nevertheless, Chatzi Hallel is a completely invented minhag. It's a minhag that does not derive necessarily from the other mitzvot. It really does, because it's based on the other Hallel. But because it's a Chatzi Hallel, maybe it's totally different. And you could disagree with Tosafot over here and say that Kriya itself is not enough. Kriya itself is not a mitzvah, it's not an action or an activity, so therefore it's insignificant in the sense that it's just Kriya, like Kriyat Torah. And then Nitilat Arava, the same way that we say by Nitilat Arava, it's not a significant enough action to be considered a takana or a mitzvah, and therefore you don't make a bracha on it. That's what you'll have to do to explain the Rambam, who has, sometimes you do make a bracha, sometimes you don't make a bracha. Yom Tov Sheni, yes. By Hallel and the Arava, no. Rabbeinu Tam is more consistent in that we make a bracha on all these cases except for Arava. And that explains away as being just this independent minhag that has no other trappings around it that would make it into a mitzvah. Alright, now we move back into the Arava sugi. Arava Ami, Arava tzricha shiur. There is a minimum requirement for an Arava, but the size is. Ve'inini telet b'fnei atzma. And when you take it alone, not together with the lulav. And because of that, obviously the arava shebelulav doesn't help you because you need to take the arava alone to give it distinction. If you take it within the lulav, it's not clear that you're taking the arava. When you take the arava alone, it's clear that you're taking the arava. That's a derivative. Why do you have to make the third statement that you can't use the arava in the lulav? If you just told me you can only take the arava by itself, the one is the logical conclusion of the other. So, ma'adu te'imani mila'echadullah agbehei, hadar agbehei, aval agbehei, hadar agbehei, emalo. So, you would have thought, had he just told me that the arava has to be taken by itself, fine, I take the lulav with the arava, and then I lift the lulav with the arava again with the intent for the arava. That's what the suggestion was in the first amud today. I would have thought that that was the case. Mashmalon, that it doesn't work. The avamina would be that you could do it by picking up the lulav twice. The mashmalon is no, that's the second statement. The arava shebelulav doesn't work, period. Rav Chistam, Rav Yitzchak, then Rav Chistam, Rav Yitzchak says, Adam Yotzei Yedech Watoba Ravash Bulav. He says, you can use the Lulav, the Arava of the Lulav, I guess you pick it up twice, and it would work. Bekama Shirura. Well, you said before that Arava requires a Shir. What is that Shir? Samar Rav Nachman, Gimel Badei Alin Lachin. Has to be three. Now, what the word Badim means, we discussed this earlier also. It's a question of Bad means a stalk. So you need three stalks with fresh leaves on them. Or does Gimel Badei Alin mean you have one stalk that has three branches that break off from it? So you need one stalk with three branches breaking off from it that have fresh leaves. Sheshet Amar, Afilu Alei Achad U'Bad Achad. Even one leaf and one bad, either a stalk or a branch. Alei Achad U'Bad Achad. How do you pick up a leaf without any attachment? And how do you pick up a bad without anything on it, leaves on it? Neither of those are significant. So Sakadatka, that's what you think it is. Eleima Afilu Alei Achad Bibad Achad. You need one leaf on a single bad, on a single stalk or a single branch. That's the conclusion as to what the shi'ur is. We are makpid to have larger number, as Rashi says. Ashnagula vi murbiot anafim arukim viafim sheminkara mitzvah ba'ayin yofeh. This is the minimum shi'ur of arava. Our practice is to bring very large, green aravot, which we do on Shana Rabba. You get these beautiful, long, big aravot, in order to make sure it's clear that you're picking up an arava, the shame mitzvah, the shame zecha lemigdash. And so we go out of our way to enhance the mitzvah, but it's not necessary according to the minimum requirements of arava. So now, Amar Aibo. Aibo says, Hava kamina kameit Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Tzadok. So I was before Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Tzadok. Okay, let's just go for a couple of things. You need a little history lesson here. Aibo is the father of Rav. Rav, the famous Rav in Shmuel Rav, his father is Aibo. That's who we're speaking about over here. Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Tzadok actually appeared on the previous Amud, and Rashi dates Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Tzadok as being contemporary of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. They're Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You know, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua. So these were the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai who live around the time of the Churban HaBayit. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lives through the Churban HaBayit, and so do his Talmidim. So that's the generation we're talking about. Rav, who is a first generation Amora, lives way later than that. And his father, Ivo, would never have seen Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, because we're talking about Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. One of his Talmidim is Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus. Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus is the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the Rebbe of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. And Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's son, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, is a contemporary of Rabbi, who's the teacher of Rav. So Ibo is a contemporary maybe of Rabbi, and he's four or five generations already after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. There's no way that Ibo saw Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. So here, the Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok here is the grandson of the original Rabbi Elazar. He's Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok the second. The first Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok is a temporary of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Talmidim. His grandson, which would make sense now, Ibo, Rav's father, met. We're going to have another Ibo in the sugya here, who is a great-grandson of this Ibo. Ibo, the father of Rav. Rav has a grandson named Ibo as well. So we're going to bump into him to the sugya. So just perspective-wise, so you don't get lost in the sugya, that's who we're discussing here. So Ibo, who was in front of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, the grandson of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, who's found on the first Zamud of today's Daf, Va'ayti au gavra arava kamei. And somebody came in with an arava to him. Shakyo chavit chavit v'lo berach. He took it. He was chavit chavit and no barich. We would think chavit chavit means to bang the arava, to clap the arava. Rashi again says ninua. He says that they shook it. Again, that's the practice, according to the Gra, and practice of the Briskers as well. In the Oshanot, before they bang it around, they actually do nanuim. They shake the arava the same way that we shake the lulav. Some of the Sidurim have it printed in there where they do the nanuim with the arava. Again, Rashi says this chavit is to be menaneya, not to smash it on the floor, but we do both. Right? So shall have a chavit velo ber barich. He didn't make a bracha on it. Kasavar minag neviim. He must hold that it's a minag neviim. This is the proof to Rashi's position that when it's a minag neviim, then you don't make a bracha. Again, the Rabbeinu Tam answered that this case is different than the other cases. Aibo v'chizkiah b'nei brati d'rav. Aibo and Chizkiah, who are grandchildren of Rav. They are the children, sons of his daughter. So now, obviously, this is not the same Aibo before. It was Aibo who was the father of Rav. This is his great-grandson, Aibo. Aitu arava l'kamei d'rav. They brought their arava before Rav, their grandfather. Chavit, chavit, v'lo barich. He did the same thing that his father describes Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok did. Kasavar minag neviim hu. He must hold that it's a minag neviim. Amar Aibo, avakamina kamei d'Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. Now we have a whole bunch of stories of Aibo the first, Rav's father, who was in front of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok, who was the grandson of the Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok we talked about on the first Amud. Ata the kamei hau gavra. An individual came before him. Amalei, priyata idle. I have villages, I have cities. Karmaya itle, I have vineyards. Zeitaya itle, and I have olive orchards. Vatu bnei kariyata, umkashkashin ve karmayo. The people in my villages come, and they work, they aerate, or they hoe my vineyards. Vochlim bezeitaya. And then they eat my olives as compensation for doing that work for me. Arich or lo arich? Is that appropriate or not appropriate? Am I doing the right thing? Now why, what's the question? The question is that it should be eat. It happens to be a Shemitah year. This is a Shemitah year. Is it okay for them to be doing work in the vineyard and then again paid from the olives in the olive orchard? So there are possibility of two problems. One is they work in the vineyard. And the second one is the olives from the olive orchard. The olives of the olive orchard have kedushat perot shvi'it. So am I allowed to use that to compensate them? Number two is, are they allowed to work the vineyard? Amalei, lo arich. He says, inappropriate what you're doing. He went out, he left. Amar kado haviti dairei ba'ara hada memshnin. Says, since I've been living in this land, meaning the land of Israel, for 40 years, v'lo achamiti barinish malech ba'archan detakan kedain. I've never seen a man who is yashar like this individual. This individual who came and posed these questions to me. I've never seen somebody who is so yashar, who wants to keep the halacha, and comes and asks whether I'm doing something right or not. So he complimented this individual who came in to ask the question. Hadar va'ati, the individual came back again. After he had left, he came back in. Amalei, my mi'avit. Okay, what should I do? I asked him, did I do right or did I do wrong? And his answer was, what you were doing was inappropriate. Then he came back in, he says, give me some advice. What am I supposed to do? What should I be doing? So Amalei, afkar zeitaya, L'chasochaya, you should be makir the zeitaya to those that are chasuchim, those that lack, meaning the poor people. Or l'chashuchaya, which would be the darkened ones, also referencing to the poor people. Because that's the din of Perot Shvit. Perot Shvit is that you have to be makir them. They're free for all. Anybody can have them. V'ten pritaya l'kushkushei kramim. And then pay from your own pocket the people that are doing work in your kramim. So there are two conclusions from this. Number one is, you're not allowed to be poreach chov. You're not allowed to pay off obligations with Perot Shvit, because that means that you're using them for personal use, plus schora. Perot Shvit are for eating, not for schora. If you're using them as a means to pay your workers, then it's a problem. So that's why you can't do that, and you have to be mafkir this Perot Shvit. That's one. The second conclusion you'll come to is that it's okay to do this kishkushe on Shemitah. He doesn't tell him to desist from that. He says, do it, just pay them out of your pocket. That's what Gemara says. Kishkushe mishari. Since when is kishkushe allowed on the Shemitah? Vatanya, don't we have a braita? Bashvit tishmetena unetashta. Again, this is a drashat chachamim on the pasuk. Tishmetena milikashkesh. You should be shomet. You should desist, rest from doing kishkush, doing this hoeing of the ground. Unetashta milisakel. And you should, again, desist or rest from being misakel. Misakel here means to remove rocks from the field. Take away rocks to make the field usable or plantable. Amar of Ukva bar Chama treit kushkushe habu. There are two types of being oder, aerating or hoeing. This has major nafkamino d'alocha. This is something very important to next year. Next year is the Shemitah year. What the Gemara is about to say is the fundamentals of how Shemitah works in the modern day, which is chad stume pile v'chari vruye ilone. One of them is closing up the fissures in the roots of the trees, something that is essential to the survival of the tree or the upkeep of the tree. The roots have become exposed, and then when you do this hoeing or you do this moving of the dirt, you're covering up the roots, which is beneficial to the survival of the tree. On the other hand, chad avruye ilone. Avruye is actually described here, that's the aerating of the dirt around the tree, which helps the tree to grow even better and to be stronger and to be more beneficial for the tree. Avruye ilane asur, that which is avruye, again, whether it means aerating, or Rashi brings a different interpretation, which means that lahavri, to make it even healthier, lashbiach, to improve the tree, is asur. Stume pile shari, that which is for the maintenance of the tree, is allowed. Now this is a big aloha in Shemitah, which is that anything that is to the maintenance of that which is there is allowed on Shemitah. So any tree, again, the tree you're allowed to maintain so the tree doesn't die. What you can't do is improve the tree so the tree gives out better fruits or will get better fruits in the future. So you have to distinguish between melachot that are there for the sustaining of the tree that you're allowed to do. Those melachot that are there to improve the tree, the quality, like if you prune the tree, if you do things like that, that's clearly there to improve the quality of the tree, not to maintain or sustain the tree. That is not allowed. So this, the Chazon Ish is a big player in this. Chazon Ish has a very expansive view with regards to what is called tume bile, or that for sustenance of the tree. And therefore he says anything that's planted basically before the Shemitah, as long as it's in the ground and growing before the Shemitah, you can do anything you need on the Shemitah to maintain it. He has a very, very loose definition of what's called maintenance or sustaining. And therefore, basically, all melachot are mutar as long as it's in the ground and growing, because otherwise it's going to die. To keep the normal growth of the tree or of whatever produce you have out there going, you're allowed to do whatever it takes normally to keep it going. And that is really the heter that most people are so mechan is this Chazon Ish. Again, Rav Kook is very machmir. He has a very narrow definition of what this maintenance is. And everybody relies on the Chazon Ish Lekula here in Shemitah, because it's a big kula of the Chazon Ish that allows people to do much of what you'll see. And again, I've mentioned in the past, for Rosh Hashanah, you're going to see them out there plowing, planting, making sure everything's in the ground a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah, so it's late. And then once that happens, you have the Chazon Ish to rely on in order to do all that you need to do in order to improve this situation. Again, the machloket amongst the Rishonim and Achronim, how exactly to be migader, to define what it considered mean to be maintenance, and what is considered to be improvement of the tree. What's the default status of a malacha, like watering? How do you know when watering is improvement, and how do you know when watering is sustaining? If it is sustaining, does that mean that you can just water as much as you want, we don't think about it? Or you have to be measured in your watering? Again, that's a machloket in the Achronim. Again, the Chazon Ish very, very makil here, and that's who we're someich on in order to do a lot of what happens here in the Shemitah year, because again, today it's only Derabbanan, and being someich on Derabbanan, we're makil with regards to this distinction that the Gemara just drew. Right. Amar Aivo Mishum Rav Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. He has a third story where Aivo is in front of Rav Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. Ayelech Adam Barvesha Batot Yoter Migimol Parso. The person should not travel more than three parsa on Erev Shabbat. Amar Rav Kahana Lo Amran Elu Beitei. That's if he's traveling to his house. Avalush Pize Amay Nenokit Samech is fine. What he's worried about is that you're going to get home and they're not expecting you. Since they're not expecting you, they're not going to prepare the meals for Shabbat. So if you travel more than three parsot on Erev Shabbat, they're not going to be aware of you coming home. And then when you show up, it's going to lead to a bad situation in which they're not prepared, you're going to be upset, and they're not going to have meals for Shabbat. On the other hand, when you're going on the road, and you're going to end up staying at a bed and breakfast, you're not depending on the bed and breakfast for your meals because you brought food with you on the road. Since you have the food already, then you don't worry about it. So if you're going to a bed and breakfast, we're not going to worry about that. The other way around, Rav Kahana says, even for your house, you can't do this, meaning that it's for both. Both for your bed and breakfast, because there you don't have anything and you're relying on them, and certainly for your house. So Amar Rav Kahana, Bididi Abi Uvdo, says, I had a situation like this, and it's probably what drove Rav Kahana to say this. I had an incident this where I returned home. I didn't even have a simple dish that I could have for Shabbat, which was this fish hash. That is a small souda, small fish that are basted with flour and put inside of fat and oil. That fish hash or that fish brine mixture, they didn't even have that ready for me in order to have a good Shabbat. And obviously he didn't have a nice Shabbat because he didn't have proper meals for Shabbat. So as that, he says, don't show up as a surprise on Erev Shabbat because they're not going to be ready for you. It's going to lead to a lot of disappointments with regards to Shabbat. Mitzvah lulav ketzad. How do you do the mitzvah of lulav? Tani tana kamei derab nachman. So drin ala gaga eats the ball. They used to set up the lulavim in the mikdash. When they brought them an Erev Shabbat, they put them up on the roof of the Yitzhaba. Amarlei v'chili yabsham hu tzarich? Does he need to dry them out? What is he putting them on the gag for? Lulav ha-yavesh is pasul. Why is he putting them on the roof of the Yitzhaba? That's going to just sit in the sun and dry out. Ela eima agava Yitzhaba. Doesn't mean on the roof of the Yitzhaba, rather on the back of the Yitzhaba. The back of the Yitzhaba is that there were benches there. There's a double colonnade, which we're going to see in a second, in which there are two levels, and also an outer and an inner one. So he should place them on the colonnades, meaning on the benches that are covered by the colonnades or the yitzhaba above it. So therefore they would be in the shade, but they would be accessible to the people to get them when they came into the mikdash, which is Amar Rachva, Amar Rav Yehuda, Harabait Stav Kaful, Hayai was a double colonnade, Stav Lifnim Mistav, colonnade inside of a colonnade, which is that you have, according to Rashi, there are lower colonnades and higher colonnades. So the lower ones acted like benches, and the higher colonnades held over some sort of canopy or roofing that created like a gazebo type of feel. Or they were inner and outer ones, and they had a roof over them, so that created a gazebo effect around the outside, something like we discussed earlier about Eruv and Sukkah, when you had the colonnades that were away from the walls of the houses inside the chatzer, and then they put a roof of the walls of the houses onto those colonnades. So it's similarly structured like that. You have two rows of colonnades and a roof on top of them that creates this cloister, as they call them, cloisters or gazebo-like structure that was around the outer edges of the mikdash. So when they wanted to make something public, they used to put it on the roof. That's what the Gemara talks about in Psachim, that they used to put the shtei chalot of the todah on top of the roof so people could see what hours they were up to in terms of eating chametz. But there it was for display, and they wanted people to see it. Over here, they want to protect the lulavim. So they don't put them on top of it, they put it underneath or inside of it so that it was shaded and well kept. Okay, we'll stop over here.